जय माँ. सो वी स्टार्ट द सीरीज, कंटिन्यू द सीरीज ऑन भागवत पुराण. एंड टुडे वी हैव अ वेरी वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग, ऑल स्टोरीज आर इंटरेस्टिंग, बट वेल नोन स्टोरी. इट इज अ स्टोरी विच हैज बीन टोल्ड बाय स्वामी विवेकानंद एंड अ स्टोरी ऑन विच श्री अरबिंदो हैज ऑल्सो कमेंटेड. We can understand the importance of the story, and the story is the story of King Jad Bharat. But before I say speak about this story, once again I want all our listeners and all of us to contemplate on the fact that there are no surnames given in the Bhagavad Puran, no surnames given in Mahabharata, no surname given in Ramayana. And now everything we talk in terms of surname, reservation is in the basis of surname, caste is on the basis of surname. Where did this surname came from? This surname is one of the legacies of the British Raj we are carrying. In the UK, and in fact if you go to the biblical era, there are surnames. So when they came, when they were documenting, they wanted surnames. And we have this, so the caste census, so-called, you can say. So it is the legacy of the British that we have surnames. Because, you know, now even today, if you apply in for passport. So I had a very interesting experience of going to somebody's place. So on the nameplate, the name of the person is written twice. Now I won't say the name because obviously... So I asked that what is the secret? He says, I don't believe in surname. They asked for the surname, so I wrote my name twice. They have to accept it. So now this modern trend is coming back again of not having surname. So the entire thing about Jati was, it was a varna, it was a type of humanity. And it's very simple. Actually, if you don't put the surname, it's very simple. So there are people who are into knowledge, they seek for knowledge, and if you don't bring this money angle, wherever they are, they will be seekers of knowledge. And there are people who are warriors. By temperament they are warriors. There are people who by temperament are businessmen. There are people who by temperament they love to work with hands and crafts. And there are plenty of others who don't have any of these four categories. It's known. It was always known like that. But anyways, so this is one of the proof that surname is a completely fabricated, concocted thing imposed upon us by the British and continued by our slavery, sign of slavery to the British Raj. High time we understand it and come out of it. Surname should go, not the reservation change and all. It should go. Let people who are... then you will have the true soul type, because then people who are really... in a certain type, they are temperamentally suited for something, will automatically gravitate. So anyway, this is a little background, because in Bhagavad Puran, you don't have surname. But you have description of kings, you have, you know, they talk about Brahmins, they talk about Vaishyas, but none of these are described by surname. So we have, last time we heard about the story of King Prithu, on whose name we have Prithvi. Prithvi is named after Prithu, the great king, and he comes out of a demon, asur, a portion of the demon, and which is so interesting that there is hope. Even in the demon there is something beautiful. And when this demon is the rishis, because they want a proper king, so out of his chest and heart emerges the king Prithu, and his lower limbs are obviously emerge another type of humanity, which is like dwarf. So it's a very interesting symbolic story that in the beginning the asura comes first and the godlike comes later. And why this is important and interesting? Because it gives hope to all of us. In one of the plays, Sri Aurobindo says, man is an asura by birth. He becomes godlike by conversion. So when we undergo a conversion, otherwise if we see what is an asura, he is totally focused on physical joy and pleasure, what is known as the Deha Atmabodh. And we have all these stories which remind us again and again that there is a way of life where we are concentrated on the physical and vital enjoyment. There is another kind of life which is concentrated on the higher goals. And of course, there is one which is about the highest goal. So in this lineage of King Prithu, on whom King Prithvi is named, there comes another great king, on whose name Bharatvarsh is named. We often say Bharat, where has Bharat come from? So before this legendary king Bharat, there are two legendary kings Bharat. One is, of course, the legendary king who is son of Vishwamitra and Menaka. Shakuntala and Shantanu, Bharat. So that comes in the Mahabharat lineage. But this is even before that. And Bhagavat itself says authoritatively, because rest is all conjecture. Mahabharat is written by the same author. He doesn't say that, you know, Bharat Varsha is named after Bharat. But he doesn't say that you can analyze the name. In the Bhagavad Puran itself, it is mentioned that Bharat Varsha is named after King Bharat, who was born of this and this, Rishabdev. We'll talk about a little bit about him. And the second thing, which before this, the name was either Jambudvip or Ajnab. So Ajnab is a very interesting name. So one is because there was a king called King Nabhi. But this is a symbolic story to my understanding, because King Nabhi has, his wife is Meru. And Meru, we know, is the spinal column, and Nabhi is the Nabhi is very interestingly the center of the human body. Actually, if you take the human body just longitudinally, I'm not talking of the psychological center, which is in the heart. If you measure the body from head to toe, then at the center is the Nabhi. And from this center, we also know Nabhi has another interesting connotation, which is out of the Nabhi or the umbilicus of Lord Vishnu or Narayan, there emerges Brahma. And then Brahma becomes the creator. So Nabhi is the central point. So Nabhi and Meru together. So they have done many other legendary deeds, and out of them is born among the kings. One of them is King Bharat. So very interestingly, we will see something, you know, the Bhagavad will not say very directly things. You have to draw conclusions. Some places it will say very directly. But many places, it's very interesting that Bharat and earlier also one of the kings, Prathu also himself, they want to take sannyas. They want to take sannyas and detach themselves from worldly life. And then Lord Vishnu appears and he tells them that no, you should do your work as a king. And he also speaks of the illusory nature of the world. Very interesting. And yet he tells them that you have to do the work of a king till you are ready for the sannyas. So it is very interesting that what is this illusion that he is speaking of? So illusion has two meanings in Indian thought. One, the extreme meaning which came post-Shankara's Vedanta, that it's non-existent, which is absolutely ridiculous, because you cannot have a non-existent illusion. Illusion is not that there is nothing. Even if you take the example of mirage, illusion is that there is desert, but it looks like water. It's not that out of the blue. So illusion means there is a distortion of reality, and this is very important connotation in the story we are going to read. So then of this legendary king, where the Nabhi, which is the center of, maybe earth also has a axis which is like the Merudand, and at the center there is the Nabhi, and in that center comes out Bharat, King Bharat, from which Bharatvarsh is born, comes into existence. And there's several stories relating to that, and I'm not going into it, that how the center of earth, people have tried to say that, you know, it is there in Ujjain, in the Mahakal temple. So anyways, that's a different story. We'll stick to Bhagavat. So then out of them comes out King Bharat, and Bharat is also very pious and very otherworldly. He is interested in ultimately realizing his union with the divine. And so he doesn't want to really get into kingdom and all. And Lord Vishnu appears and he tells him, look here, you should get married, have children. You should take care of the kingdom. And he also says, he speaks of the illusory nature. Then unless you understand illusion as a distortion or a perversion of reality, there will be a problem. Because, you know, why is Lord Vishnu asking to engage and get married and have children? And then when the time comes, you will come to me. Now, this is very important, because in India we had the Varna Ashram, not just Varna Ashram, Ashram. So we have Grihastha Ashram, we have, you know, brahmacharya ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, and moksha ashram, moksha sannyasa ashram. So you have to go through this process to be ready. Supposing a prematurely 19 year, 20 year, you come and join the ashram. Sri Aurobindo was not taking people for a long time. The people who came at 23, 24, he would not take. And the reason he gave is because if you come prematurely, many of the natural impulses at your age will rise up and create a problem. So because of that, we had the whole process of, you know, the four ashramas of life. Ashram comes from labor. So you have to first meet the world. There is a very interesting line in Savitri. See how these things are connected. He says, after we have served the great divided world, God's bliss and oneness are our inborn right. So Vishnu Bhagwan tells him that you take care of, you marry, you have a child. So he marries, has five children, and you govern the kingdom. And after this king Bharat, there is the Bharat Varsh, our own country, India has been named. This is according to Vishnu Puran. I am not talking of Sanskrit and all that conjecture. It's Vishnu Puran mentions that, which is very authentic. Now comes that Bharat, King Bharat governs for how many years? So we have 100,000 years, which seems astronomical. Actually 1 crore, not even 100,000. 1,000 or something like that. I've forgotten the number, and it but amounts to 1 crore. So many people will say, how can somebody live so long? No other king you see here about 1 crore years. So obviously King Vyas is, many of the verses of King Vyas, even in Mahabharata, are cryptic. He is known for this. He is like a playful child, and I'll give you a small little story about it. So when Lord Ganesh, he comes, and you know, because Vyas is super inspired, and he's also a Trikal Darshi Rishi. So when he's writing, he needs somebody who is competent. So Ganesh, he comes, he says, okay, I'll write. But then Ganesh, he puts a condition. If you stop in between, I'll go away. I don't have time to waste. You are thinking and I'm sitting. I don't do that. So Vyas Rishi says, okay, agreed. My condition is that you will write what you understand. So Mahabharata has many verses which you don't understand directly. It takes time. Vyas Rishi is a master of that. And we are seeing. He will suddenly throw an off-spin ball or googly. And you're wondering. And if you are very rash, you will say that, well, this is all nonsense. Because, you know, this means it is a mythology, legend. It means it never happened. Now, my take, nowhere it is described why, how he lived for 1 crore years. So what lives for 1 crore year? This is my pure, my own intuitive understanding. So what lives for 1 crore years, when the man is gone, is his khyati, his tej, his deeds. So his living for 1 crore years may well mean that the glory that he established as Bharatvarsh has a very long, that glory will remain probably till the end of the Chaturyog. That's how I understand. Because thousands of years often means this, hundreds of years. Even we say, na colloquially, tum jiyo hajaro saal. We say, are we foolish that we are saying jiyo hajaro saal means we don't understand that nobody lives for 1,000 years. So, tum jiyo hajaro saal is that even after your physical body is gone, may your glory, may your deeds last long. So, it's a very simple way to understand how he lived and lives on for crore years. And right now we see that through the debate, now the name of India, once again people are talking of Bharat. And even in the constitution it is mentioned, India, that is Bharat. So it's officially in the constitution. It's just that we are so foolish that we don't use the word. It's officially India, that is Bharat. That's how the Britishers called it India. But Bharat Varsh was never lost. So this is about the legendary King Bharat, who is born. And he marries a wonderful woman, and he has five children, and he continues for 1 crore years. And after that, time, when the time is ready, he governs the kingdom very beautifully according to what are the right things. He does various yajñas. So those yajñas are also described. So again, this yajña, there is a material and there is an inner yajña. So there is a pashu yajña. Even now you will see some odd places where pashu bali is given in the name of yajña. But pashu yajña always meant the offering of the animal within us. The animal exists within us. So we have to, even modern psychology will say, when you offer this animal, it's pashu yajña. Ashwamedh yajña is the offering of the intellect, medha, and the ashva, the force. That means life, energy, and the intellect, when it is offered for the higher purpose. Yajña means, I will not use it for my egoistic purposes. This is meant for everybody, basically. And when it is offered to the gods, then gods join and they augment, and then it is used for everybody, for the good of the world. So that's what yajña means, even if we go back to its roots. So he does pashu yajña, he does ashwamedh yajña, he does yajña in which som is offered. Now this I want to mention because they are such foolish, even a well-known author, on that som was barley plant, and you know, they took it and they had those mysterious effects. Of course, any average reader would understand som is barley plant, but he also understands that the entire language of the Rig Veda and of Veda in general works on three levels. There is a physical level which is symbolic. Why they were using it? To conceal the deeper truth from anybody and everybody. So, and even in Greek mysticism, Egyptians, obviously the person, and he's a well-known person, so I was very surprised that, and there are people who would read and catapult him to heights. That's their business. I'm talking of Devdutt, who says that, you know, this Soma was barley plant. Now, this is, of course, Soma is barley plant, but that's not the reference. If you apply barley plant to Soma, then you cannot explain the Rig Veda, the Dasama Mandal, where Soma goes and requests the sleeping divine mother to come up, and Soma carries her everywhere. I mean, it'll be too much that he goes under the water. So if you apply that kind of meaning, you cannot apply it to all the verses. So first of all, please don't believe any kind of authority who just says anything. So Soma is the Ananda. So normally when we grow in our inner consciousness, there is joy. Now what happens when this joy comes in? We tend to frit it away. Well, classic example here, many people know, on darshan days, isn't it? So there is a joy. And people, after some time, they begin to chat, they begin to, discuss, they laugh, and they throw away. And mother said, you should conserve it. So what is offering of Soma means, in the course of yajña, sadhana, this grows in us. Because all the spaces which were occupied by various kinds of sorrow, suffering, they are occupied now with the joy of God. But human beings have a tendency to throw it away. So instead of doing it, it should be offered back to the divine for his use, for his purposes. That is the Soma Yajna. So when we do that Yajna, then it grows. So that's what King Bharat has done. And because he did that, so sacrifice is the law of life. And so because he did it, his khyati continues to grow. So this is the basic principle behind it. So this King Bharat, the story which we are going to now talk about it, that toward the end, I mean, all this is part of the Bhagavad, but the meaning part I am just attaching to it. So, as the story goes, that toward the end, when he has done with everything, he is living in a forest, Pulha Ashram. And there he spends his time meditating upon Lord Hari. And as he meditates, he thinks about him. His heart begins to become one with universal love. He experiences the hairs standing on end, tears, which are all classical signs of a bhakta. Wonderful. All good. But something happens. And what happens is that towards the later part, when he is about to realize something very beautiful, ultimate unity with the Godhead, suddenly he is a witness to a scene, and in that scene there is a deer, a female deer who is pregnant, who is crossing the river because it's attacked by a lion. And she is so afraid, terrified. As she crosses the river, she jumps, she delivers the baby. And she jumps across and the lion chases her and she dies anyways. But the baby is alive, born in the water. So what does King Bharat do? King Bharat brings the baby with him. Now, mind you, he has renounced his kingdom, he has renounced his wealth, he has renounced his wife, children, everything. But he gets slowly very attached to this little fawn, the baby deer. And he gets so attached that when he sits for meditation, his mind is, are there some animals attacking? So he can't keep his eyes closed. If he hears the roar of a lion or, you know, any creature of that kind, hurry, has somebody taken away? If the fawn wanders away, he is just waiting for the fawn to come. See, we don't need big things to be attached. Mother speaks of it. She says, often it is not the big things on which you stumble. You stumble on the small pebbles. And she gives this example. This exactly from Jad Bharat. I mean, she has not read the Jad Bharat, though she has many stories which are similar to that. So, if you are going on a scooter, you see a big stone. You are careful. What you don't notice is small little gravel on the sand. You think it's okay, I'll navigate. That's when one falls. So the story of Jad Bharat starts with this fall, which he gets so engaged with the deer. He has to feed her, provide everything, and just imagine, a renunciate who could renounce everything. After enjoying everything, he could not renounce his attachment to that baby deer. And then toward the end, what happens is that when he is leaving his body, he is worried about the deer. What will happen to the deer when I am gone? And he is thinking of the deer. Imagine his state. Instead of thinking of the Lord. So he dies. And what happens? Now here we have two very interesting other occult truths. As we have seen, they are very profound. You may have whatever good karmas or bad karmas. Your last moment of death is very important. Gita speaks about it. Sri Aurobindo speaks about it. Why it is important? It is important because the whole consciousness is concentrated. So it's a moment where you can take a leap or you can fall back. I know one of the deaths in ashram, it's plenty I have seen. So two deaths I'll mention, that last moment thing. One of the person who came here was fall cancer, which is filled all over the body. And he came to know that, you know, now I'll leave. So he said, he called me, his family members, wife, others waiting. So I somehow felt he doesn't want to see them. So I asked him, they are there, do you want to meet them? He said, no. I said, thank you. I respect your wish. He was in the nursing home. I went and told them, I'm sorry, this may sound harsh, but he doesn't want to meet anyone. 16 hours, this man was sitting in meditation. And at night, 1 o'clock, the sister somehow felt, let me go and check. And as she goes and sees, suddenly his head turns to one side. He left the body very consciously. Another story I know. Why this is important? Because that's why we had the 4 ashramas. Please, after 75, I would say much earlier, don't get involved into family activities if you want really to be liberated. If you want to suffer, make everybody suffer, and in return you suffer. So this idea, often people say, oh, they left their old people in... in an old age home, we had vanprastha. And if you read through, the Bhagavad itself mentions that all the that Dhritarashtra, Gandhari and Kunti, they walked away at night when all the 5 children were sleeping. Why they walked away? And they are crying, oh, where have they gone? Because they realize that we are getting very attached. And Narad Muni comes and tells them, what are you guys doing? You have seen the good and bad of it. Now walk away. Otherwise, you will lose. And they walk away and they finally, you know, die in that forest. It's there in the whole story. Vidur, Gandhari, Kunti, all of them walk away. Vidur survives, of course. Vidur dies a different death. So again, whole idea was, and this was such a simple solution to so many problems that many households have. So coming back to this story, so he has come here and he is supposed to now lead that life of last years of life are meant to be like that. So one of the ladies I know, she was a famous film actress in France, and she was very attached to her son. So attached. Son is in 60s, but she won't sleep till he comes back from ashram. And very near, house is very near. And son said, what can I do? Please explain to her. I said, this is beyond her explanation now. So anyways, when she was admitted in nursing home, I saw that because of her attachment, she is unable to leave. And one day after 4 weeks of unconsciousness, so the son came. I wanted to see. He didn't come for a few days. I said, let me see. She's still attached. She would not respond to anybody or anything. But the moment he would put his hand on her hand, she would clasp. There would be a reaction. So I told him, you tell her that it's okay. Please depart. It's fine. We are fine. I'm safe in birth mother. He said that. And after 2 days, there was no reaction. And the next day she withdrew. So this is not just a story of one Jad Bharat. It's a story of many yogis. And I have seen, even here I have seen last year, suddenly you have some cancer or something. And if you are in Deh Atmbodh, you will suffer and people will, oh, why this happened? Why that happened? Bring the doctor. Please, this is not the way for a yogi to depart. Somebody who has given his life to the divine, leave it. What the divine knows, what is best. But of course, that person has to take a decision. Nobody else can decide for someone. So this is what happens. And of course, that time we didn't have so much modern medicine, so dilemmas were much less. So King Bharat, the famous legendary yogi and king, legendary king and yogi, dies thinking of the deer and is born in a deer body. Now you see, where does karma, karmic law go? It is not about papa and punya. Now here you will see a very beautiful understanding of the karmic law. It's not like 100 years back you had done this karma. None of this is there in Indian thought, mainstream Indian thought. These are all concoctions made by people, and we'll talk about how the concoctions come. So here, he had done his tapasya for so many years. He had looked after his kingdom. But because of his extreme attachment during the time of death. You know, this time of death, once again, Kapali Shastri writes in one of the places, great yogi in ashram. The best way, if you want to do something when somebody is departed, the best thing to do is to forget him. And I read it. It was very harsh that I realized what he's saying. He's on a journey. Let him go peacefully. To let him go. Or send thoughts of love. That's what mother says. Send thoughts of love. So here is King Bharat who dies thinking of deer. So what is he born? He is born in the as the body of a deer. But because of his good deeds, he is conscious. Now you see, where does karma law go? And this is more logical, because if you say that because of good karma, some karma you take in that sanchit karma, prarabd karma, it sounds too mechanical to be true. Here is something very beautiful, that you had a certain, this life, certain way of living, both of this comes together, but because inwardly he was so conscious, but outwardly he got attached, so he had the body of a deer, but he had the entire memory. Who is he? Now, it may sound strange, but I do believe this is true. They don't speak animals, but they sometimes remember. I know of a cow, even Raman Maharshi. There was a cow called Lakshmi who would come and be near the ashram, and he told that she has got liberated. Something similar, because some of these beings do come. They go to that place, like that crocodile in one of the ashrams. So they do have something inside. Some people go through this process. That because they have certain animal tendencies. Mother says sometimes, usually it is discarded. In ashram, I feel many of the animals, it just get discarded and enters into them. This also one of the process. But in his case, it took form as a deer body. Punishment or reward? It's a reward. Why? Because he had to experience being conscious. He cannot remember in words because the deer doesn't have the language. But he remembers what he has lost. He remembers where he came from. So every time he would seek that Pulha ashram, his own ashram, and go there, he would sit there and cry. You see many dogs here, some of those in the near the ashram, and they recognize a devotee from a random person. Maybe some of these are like Jad Bharat. So plenty of examples I could give. So this deer remembers, and finally he is inwardly in his dumb prayer praying that this should not happen to me again. So he dies and now he is born again. Now he is born as a Brahmin boy. Now again, he is not Brahmin boy with surname of Pandey or Sharma or any such thing. He is a Brahmin boy because right from beginning he seeks knowledge. But he appears very crazy. He has made sure that he appears crazy so that nobody, disturbs him, or they all call him crazy man. So in this same story, it is described in the context of Rishabhdev also. Rishabhdev, who is the father. So Rishabhdev is one of them who is regarded in the Jain parampara as one of the Tirthankar. So Rishabhdev is again, he goes to the forest and he behaves sometimes like a madman, sometimes like a jad, sometimes like a child, and sometimes like a ghoul. So these are the four types of behaviors known in some of these realized persons. They may behave like, Sri Aurobindo speaks about it, and it's there also in Shankaracharya's literature. So they may become balvat, which is very like a child. What is a child? Child has no boundaries, child has no ego, child has no prestige, child just enjoys. Balvat, that's the best case scenario. Or they become jadvat. They are just sitting, they are not, they look like idiots. I have seen some such people, but they are very awakened inside. Or he may become like a unmatvat, like a madman. Jumping, dancing, all kinds of things. And you will think that such a person is mad, but yes, behind the madness. So if people in the ashram call you mad, that means you are in a good category. If they call you a very sane person and very logical, then probably you have not started the whole process. So unmatvat, of course, Sri Aurobindo says you have to change nature. But this is a phase, because your old conditioning is gone. You are not holding on to this prestige, this norm of behavior, this form of behavior. It all goes. And that's why it's so difficult to judge a spiritual person. You should never do that, because their behavior is not according to social conforming standards. So you become unmatvat, or you can become pishachvat, like a ghoul. Eating anything, all kinds of things. You just wonder what kind of a spiritual person is, but maybe very realized inside. So King Bharat enters into that state of jadvat and unmatvat. So he behaves like a madman. Everybody beats him. He rolls in the mud. He puts all kinds of things over. He is conscious inside. He says, this time I'll make sure that nobody even likes me. Because he's got that, experience, bad experience. So he goes through this and he remembers, he says, this life I'm not going to waste. So he becomes like a jad. So he's known as Jad Bharat. So then destiny will have its way. After all, he is now so enriched. He can't just leave without giving to earth what is due to be given. So one day he is lying like that. And a king is coming in a palanquin, palki, Rahuguna. So Rahuguna, four people are taking the palki, and as destiny would have it, one of them just drops off his eye, just cannot. And they see this Jad Bharat sitting in the forest, just enjoying life. And they say, hey, you come. Now king would not ask, he'll order. I am the king, come. So he picks up the palki and he carries on. This is a very dangerous thing. Huh? Somebody picks up the palki. It has happened to Indra also. Once Agastya Rishi was picking up his palki. And because Indra wanted that time, Indra means Indra is a post. So the person who was occupying the post, I'm forgetting the name, I'll come back. So he had started doing all kinds of things. So these rishis go and they are carrying the palki. And they are going slow because he has to meet Sachi. He wants to marry. So he gets very annoyed. He says, Sarpa, Sarpa means go fast, go fast. In that process, he hits Rishi Agastya. Sarpa, Sarpa. Agastya Rishi says, you Sarpa. And he falls down and becomes a snake, a worm. And he lives like a worm. So it's a very fascinating story. So here he gets very angry. And he says, initially he tells him nicely that, you see, you look quite okay. Huh? Don't behave like as if you don't have strength. You are walking very clumsily. I have to go somewhere. I am the king. I have to go somewhere. But he says nothing. Bharat, Jad Bharat says nothing. He is just carrying the palki and again doing dagmak, dagmak. So again the king gets angry. He says, what is it? And he is now getting angry at everybody. Why this fellow is doing this zigzag? Now Jad Bharat speaks. Because king says, I am the king, I am ordering you. And you should do this, that. He says, you are living in illusion. Everybody's body is formed of the same earthly matter. You think you are identified with king. You think you are king, and my body, you are thinking that, or this body, that body. But all bodies are one body. They are all made up of the same matter. As to the place in society, I admit, society gives a certain place. But all this is transient. Today you are king. Tomorrow, you may be carrying the palki and I may be sitting in the position of the king. There is a little story like that. I'll recount that story. It's not from the Bhagavad, but it's something very similar. Probably somebody is inspired by this story. And the story goes that there is a man who was a disciple of a yogi. And one day, he goes away because he wants worldly things and he goes away. And one day, the king is coming, sitting on an elephant. Now his guru knows the time has come to bring him back. So he goes to bring him back, and this disciple who has forgotten his path is beginning to see, and he tells him, who is coming? So the disciple, guru is asking, but he doesn't recognize the guru. He has changed himself. He said, don't you see king is coming? He said, who is the king? He said, blind fellow, don't you see the king? He says, but I don't know who is the king. He said, the man sitting on the elephant. He says, but which is the elephant and which is the king? Now the disciple gets very angry. He has forgotten his way. He makes him on his four. He puts the guru on the fours and says, you are the elephant. Then he sits on his back and says, I am the king. Now you understand? He says, yes, one last question. Last question is, everything is fine, but who is you? And who is I? Now he is taken aback. This is his ultimate question. So along similar lines, then he has the realization, what is he doing? That this is the same I. So he says, you are under the influence of illusory energy and you think you know because you have read the Vedas, you have read things, you are respected by people. So you think you are somebody great, but destiny will take its own course and tomorrow you may be pulling my chariot and I may be sitting there. So then he suddenly, king, gets this, that, you know, what he was doing. He says, I'm very sorry, but still you have not answered. You were walking like this. He says, yes, I was walking like that because every 3 feet I was a little bit changing course because they were ants and they were worms. I didn't want to hurt them. You didn't see that. You didn't understand that I am doing this because I didn't want to hurt any creature. Then the king, Rahuguna, says, you give me the knowledge. I realize that I am under a great spell of illusion. And then a dialogue follows between the two, which is very beautiful dialogue. He gives several examples. And I'll read some of these examples, which King Jad Bharat, who is now a Yogi Bharat, his first discourse, you can say, is to this king who had lost his way but refinds himself. Now, again, here you will see that none of these standard ideas of, karma and law apply. Karma here is entirely an evolutionary mechanism. Getting into a body of a deer, but with the consciousness of a sage, is very unnerving. Because you are a different person and you are surrounded by people who don't understand you. It could be even as a human being, that you are surrounded by people who just don't understand. And even as a young in his next life, he's surrounded by everybody. His family members, none of them understand him. They think he's a mad person. So if people think you are a mad person, maybe you are in good company. But anyways, so he gives several examples. And one of the examples he gives is of a great forest. He just tells it like a story. So as we know, in Bhagavad, there are stories. And then in the next canto, there will be an explanation of the story. So King Bharat or Jad Bharat, the Yogi Bharat, on whose name Bharatvarsh is there, he tells King Rahuguna a story of a man who walks into the forest. There he meets some bandits. There are 6 bandits who completely loot his wealth, and then he goes taking shelter in a tree, but then there is a cave and he enters into the cave. I mean, if you read the story, the who are the bandits, where is the cave and where is the tree, he just tells it like a story. So Raghuna says, you know, my buddhi doesn't work. Your story is very profound. Please explain to me in simple terms. I mean, this is because many people would not get what example from this example. So now Bharat explains. This is his, you can see the last discourse, the story of King Bharat or Jad Bharat. The material world is the great forest of enjoyment. The direct meaning of the forest of material existence is that the merchants sometimes enter the forest to collect many rare things and sell them at a good profit in the city. But the forest path is always bedecked with dangers. When the pure soul wants to give up the Lord's service to enjoy the material world, just imagine the people in whom this idea comes. You are given an opportunity to serve the divine, and you take a different path. If you are not given this opportunity, it's okay. You are safe. Safe in the sense you have not yet gone through the experience. Material world. Then the Lord says, okay, enter the material world and see. So what happens? So what happens after that? I'll just read. Ultimately, good things only happen. But how the journey goes? In this, first of all, description, just see. In this world, there are many envious people. There is the tax-exacting government, which is compared to an owl. And Shurvinda once speaks about it when he is asked about taxation. He says it's like robbing the robbers. That's how he has used. And there are invisible crickets that create unbearable sounds. The conditioned or conditioned soul here means the bound soul is certainly greatly harassed by the agents, but his intelligence is lost due to undesirable association. That's why satsang is so important. First thing King Bharat says, you have the capacity, but your friendship has ruined you. Mother speaks of this exactly. She says there were children here with exceptional capacity, but they were lost because of wrong associations. I know of one person, and many of the things he has, the forest path, no? Mothers, there is a story, path of later on. She wrote this story at the age of 15, where a man is walking into a forest, and there he sees there are two paths. So one path is very pleasant in the beginning. Yeah, oh, so lovely. And the other is, okay. This is a pleasant path I should take. He goes. But as he goes, something within him is telling him that don't take this path. But he continues, let's see, he's enjoying the fruits. And as he goes further, it becomes more and more terrible. And he ultimately ends into an abandoned castle. And it's a very gory description. And that castle, he goes, what castle is this? Abandoned, haunted castle. So it is the castle of nowhere. The road that leads you nowhere. Castle of nothingness. So he enters into that. So mother wrote this story at the age of 15. This is exactly the story which about the forest path which he's describing. It, obviously the details are different and mother has written it. But this is a subtle truth. So intelligence is lost due to undesirable association. It's so important. The company we keep. In an attempt to gain relief from the disturbances of material existence, he falls victim to so-called, mark the words, so-called yogis, sadhus, and incarnations. This is there in the Bible also. Who can display some magic, especially those who can give you your wish granting. This is the most dangerous because divine teaches you conquer desires. So which god will fulfill your wishes? Who wants to trap you? But who do not understand devotional service. And the way out which is described in the end is, if they have lost the path, the way out is devotion and service to the Lord. Because there is no other way. If you try, the more you enter, the more it will catch you. And so it describes what are the options. Sometimes the imprisoned soul is bereft of all money, and consequently he becomes unkind to his family members. And then all this it describes, and finally I'll come to. Sometimes being in need of money, the conditioned soul steals and cheats. Although he may apparently be associated with devotees for spiritual advancement, His only business is getting out of the clutches of Maya. But due to improper guidance, he becomes more and more entangled in material dealings. So it's not like I can live in the ashram and I'm in the company of devotees, but my mind is constantly with, you know, how to earn more money and how to, you know, engage in share market and enjoy life. It won't do, because the divine knows who is really ready and who is not ready. And we don't have to worry about what others are doing, but we should be conscious of our own dealings. So he says very clearly, and he says that, you know, this world brings misery, and Shobindu speaks of three main obstacles to spiritual life. Main obstacles. The mother adds one which is the most important, but she does it later. So three main obstacles are money, power, that is ambition, and sex. These are the three main obstacles, the three doors to hell. And Shobindu speaks about it. And same thing, either in pursuit of money, pursuit of women, or pursuit of maybe reaching a post or something where people will give respect. Mother added fear. She said the base of it, root of it is fear. So we have kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mad, matsar. So he says when a person loses his intelligence due to attachment to wife, oblique husband, and sex, his entire consciousness becomes polluted. He thus only thinks of association with women. The time factor, which is like a serpent, because in the story there is a serpent who is chasing, there is a python which is eating away, takes away everyone's life, including that of Lord Brahma and the insignificant ant. So he is given a time. You lose it, you lost it. So it's an opportunity. And that's why mother says, once there was a person who lived in the ashram for very long, and then a very well-known person, so I'll not name. He was invited to become a professor somewhere outside. So he left and became professor. He accepted a university post as a professor. And then Duman Bhai was asked by someone, what happens to such a person? Will he come back? He said very cryptically, yes, but who knows how many lives? If you don't have an opportunity, it's okay. When you are given an opportunity, hold it like life, more than life. Many temptations will come, many suggestions will come, many things will happen. People will be there to push you away and make you feel. But if you take that, then we don't know after what time that moment will come again. There is a poem of Sri Aurobindo about it, where he speaks about the dream boat. Has anyone read that poem? The dream boat, where he, please read it. He says that I was standing, and then the boatman comes to take me along the path. Do you have the poem? I can read. You are taking out, so I can read the few lines. So he says, I am the dream boat. So it's in collected poems. So he wants to take the path. He comes to take him. So he says that I thought, what do I have to lose? What will I lose? What will I gain? So while he's thinking, he goes away. This is Sri Aurobindo's version of Jagannath Rath. So the dream boat is coming to pick up, and you are calculating. So the dream boat goes away. Okay, yeah, I'll just want to read it. Something very, very beautiful, one of my favorite poems. The dream boat, who was it that came to me in a boat made of dream fire, with his flame brow and his sun gold body? I'm just reading it because I think we have done it in collected poems. Melted was the silence into a sweet, secret murmur. Do you come now? Is the heart's fire ready? Hidden in the recesses of the heart, something shuddered. It recalled all that the life's joy cherished. Image the felicity it must leave, lost forever. Arey, maza aata tha. Wait. What happens after that? And the boat passed, and the gold god vanished. What happens after that? Same thing. In the Bhagavad is recounted in a, of course, in a story way. Now, within the hollowness of the world's breast inhabits. Now, within the hollowness of the world's breast inhabits. What you felt will give me joy seems hollow. For the love died. For the love died and the old joy ended. Now, death of love here is a blessing. For the love died. And the old joy vanished, ended. Void of a felicity that has fled, gone forever. That's why in the ashram we don't have marriages. But people go through relationship. Mother gives the experiences, come out. You are not stuck in it. Yeah, that's it. It may not be understood by the world, but this is the logic behind it. And the gold god and the dream boat come not. He says, now I am just waiting. Please come again. So you see, all this is very profound, this, and practical. So, sometimes when he is detected, he temporarily renounces everything. But due to his great attachment for the body, his renunciation is given up before he can attain perfection. You will see sometimes people here having cancer or things like that toward the end. And people often ask, "Are, why is such a person?" I tell them, "Bhaiya, ye antim test hai. Aise nahi milti hai parampad, supramental body. If you are attached to the body, look at Sri Aurobindo with all the power at his disposal, how he departs." And Nirodha says, "I have seen you cure so many people. Why aren't you applying? Are you applying your force on your body?" He says, "No." Why? You won't understand. He's not waiting for mother to be around, even that. Mother says, "I am going to my room." How to understand this Leela? She says, "I am going to the room. When the time comes, let me know." And then only one act toward the end, suddenly Champak Lalji, he calls Nirodha and says, "Give me water." This is a grace to Nirodha. He gives water. And then Champak Lalji, whom he embraces, and then he lies down, puts his both hands on the chest and leaves the body. Know this thing, imagine. Nobody knows what has happened in the silence of the night. Not that people are gathering. I mean, people would have just gathered. Morning they come to know and they have a hushes thing. So, this is the difference. And he becomes a victim of so-called yogis, sadhus and incarnations. So, all kinds of people. And ultimately says the method that the Bhagavad describes and Sri Aurobindo has spoken of it is that they are, Bhagavad describes the way out is devotion and service. Nothing else. The government officials are like carnivorous rakshasas. They are always who exact heavy taxes for the maintenance of the government. The hard working bound soul is very saddened due to these heavy taxes. But that's what it is caught into. The path of fruitive activities. Fruitive activity means where you are working for a result. Leads to difficult mountains, and sometimes the bound soul wants to cross these mountains, but he is never successful. And consequently, he becomes more and more aggrieved and disappointed. Becoming materially and financially embarrassed, the bound soul unnecessarily chastises the family in the material condition. There are four principal needs, out of which sleep is compared to a python. When asleep, the bound soul totally forgets the real existence. Sometimes in need of money, the bound soul steals and cheats. Although he may be apparently be associated with devotees for spiritual advancement. So even those who are near, "Are, he is an ashramite, please." That means nothing. I met some of the people like that, you know, who wanted to do something and wanted to... I am not interested, thank you so much. But because Bhagavad saves you from all these things. There was a person who would who cheated people in the name of Sri Aurobindo. He was collecting donations. And someone said, we gave him because he took your name. He said, why did you take me? He used to spend a lot of time with you. He said, some of the people near to me are great asuras. Why you did not use your discernment? There was one more person who was collecting a lot of money in the name of the Divine Mother and the ashram. He finally went to jail. Died at caught in Germany. So we should be very clear that this life is a different kind of life. Okay, last bit we'll read. So it describes all that, you know, serpent is behind, the serpent of desire which is pricking and chasing, and they are bogus saviors. Their only business is indulging in sex and reconnecting sexual freedom even for widows. Rajneesh, you will see. Only business. And they talk very intellectually, you will be very impressed, but one should be very careful. And the Bhagavad describes them, they are like monkeys in the forest. So, and then finally, many such examples it gives. Many, many, many. It's a very fascinating, wonderful story. One of the favorites. So one may call himself unfortunate and all these things, but ultimately you are entangled. Then illicit sex, stealing another's property, he may be arrested by the government. All these things he describes, foreseen. Basically, all these things will come to take away, because the story of Jad Bharat is basically how a person very developed inside can be taken away toward the end. That is the time when you should be much more concentrated. Because that is the time when you have gone through life and now you should be totally concentrated. And then suddenly death strikes, the pseudo-swamis, all this who do not believe in the divine personality, etc. They will come. All this it has foreseen. And okay, toward the end. Okay. One even forgets. Okay. Sometimes he is happy maintaining his family. Thodi khushi, thoda gum. Bahut wah. And sometimes he is overjoyed and sings melodiously. In this way he becomes entangled and forgets his separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since time immemorial. You know the story of Narada and Krishna which I have told earlier. Suddenly he says, I want to understand Maya. Krishna says, first get me water. He gets entangled, gets married, has children, forgets Krishna and his thirst, and one day there is a forest fire and everything is gone. And then Narada suddenly says, why did you do this to me? And he hears a voice, Narada, I am thirsty. And then he wakes up. Thus he traverses the dangerous path of material existence, and on this path he is not at all happy. Now it is not creating a division, mind you, because there is a whole time when Lord Vishnu asks everybody that go through life, be there, help man, help advance the race. That's what you will find in the poem Rishi, that be not afraid of loving, love man, love this, do achieve great deeds. And at the end, when you are not afraid of love, then you realize the Supreme Personality. So this is a path. That's what Shri Krishna speaks of these people who create buddhi bhed by advocating people to take to asceticism. He says, don't do buddhi bhed. You have to go through this. And slowly people take complete shelter. The conclusion is that no one can be happy in material life. So material life has a meaning and a purpose. It is to manifest the divine. That's Sri Aurobindo tells us. But here, that is not the goal. One must take to the divine consciousness and signs it gives of saintly persons. Saintly persons don't roam around in big palki and, you know, they curse and they hold dharna. This is not a sign of saintliness. How do you recognize a saintly person? So the Bhagavad gives the same sign which we see in the Gita. Maitri Karuna Evascha. Saintly persons who are friends to all living entities have a peaceful consciousness. You'll feel peace, joy, friendliness in their presence. They have controlled their senses and minds and they easily attain the path of liberation, the path to Godhead. Okay, and they are very unfortunate who can't associate with them. And so he describes many saintly kings, etc. And finally closes with this whole thing. Okay. Okay. So this story is says, what is the final state? So he says that the person should think of the divine being in the following way. It speaks of prayer, but we need not go into that. So the supreme personality of the divine, repeatedly it speaks of that, is sacrifice personified. The God gives himself to, God gives himself to the whole creation. Therefore the way back is sacrifice, the law of sacrifice. He is the protector, personification of yoga, the source of all knowledge, the controller of creation, and the super soul, Paramatma, in every living entity. In every living entity, therefore we must talk and deal with everybody with love and respect. He is beautiful and attractive, Madhuram, Madhuram. He is not harsh and judgmental. And therefore, at the end, he says that what is the aspiration one should have. Bharat is now, after this discourse, says, I am leaving this material body, and he says this, I am quitting this body, offering obeisances unto him, and hoping that I may perpetually... He still asks for a boon. What will he ask for a boon? What is a boon that a liberated person will ask? He asks for a boon, Bharat, as he leaves the body after all this drama. He says, hoping that I may perpetually engage in his loving service, uttering this, Maharaj Bharat left his body. That's the beauty, that even liberated souls seek the opportunity to serve the divine. And loving service, not a mechanical service, not a calculated service, what I am getting. So, rarest of rare, in the ashram it was asked, Sri Aurobindo was asked, who are the people who come here? Why is it that some of us have come here? So, Sri Aurobindo says, the punyas in previous life suddenly bearing fruits in this life. Second is the aspiration to serve the divine in some life. Spoken about this. And the third is some actual physical relationship with the mother or myself in a past life. And he says, because the person asked that it's so rare to have this kind of bhakti and service, and we have been given this opportunity. How come? Because if we look at ourselves, there is nothing special about any of us. We are regulars, usual stuff. But the Lord has called and accepted in his service. That's the only merit. He has awakened love for him in our heart. That's the only treasure, treasure of treasures that we all carry. May this treasure of bhakti and seva of the divine be for all. Chema.